Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. World Watchers emanates from KAZU FM in Pacific Grove, California. This is broadcast number 683, and we start the new year, January the 7th. It's the first program of the new year, 1984. We've had problems with our equipment at the radio station, so many of the people who listen regularly will have to just get caught up on the information of the past weeks that you didn't have access to World Watchers, and tapes are available. You can split the cost with friends or just pass it over and pick up where we left off. Many of you didn't hear the broadcast I did on December the 17th, and I was trying to think in my mind out loud what format I want to take for the next year, because there's just too much information coming in, too many calls, too many letters. And I asked for suggestions for people listening to this on other stations and also the regular subscribers to the broadcast. And I think I have enough input of mail and correspondence, telephone calls now, to come to some conclusion for 1985. And then I'll stick with those. I don't oscillate too much, and I've decided what I'm going to do. Before I get into the details of that, I do want to thank you for sending checks to the station. Many of you sent checks to KAZU that are not in the listening range of this station, one of them up to 100, and there were others for not very much money and several dollars, but that was very important to the people who sent it. Instead of writing individual letters, can I thank you personally now to each one of you who did that, because it indicated that you do appreciate the format and appreciate the news, and the people at the station who are keeping this equipment together felt very kindly that you would send in this money to them. So thank you for that. Now, when I asked the question, what five possibilities, what are my possibilities this year in 1985 to satisfy myself that I'm reaching the maximum amount of people and getting the most response from it, or producing the amount of material I want to get disseminated, I literally opened up a listener's Rorschach test. In fact, the letters were so interesting, I think I'm going to keep asking the question every week and collect the letters and print them as a book. That would make a book itself for people who are new listeners, regular listeners, the kinds of things that they answered and the way they perceived my research and the effort that I'm putting out. Some of it was very shocking to me and some of it was very gratifying, and I can share a few kinds of letters with you. One said, it's impossible to evaluate your influence. Stop your telephone calls, stop your letters, don't send articles out, but stay on the air whatever you do. Another person surprised me. They wrote, write a broadcast once a month and summarize the earth-shaking events. No comments. Another one said, don't miss a single tape, stay on weekly. Another one said, I hope the tapes don't stop the broadcast. A very close friend wrote, whatever you decide to do is okay by me. I trust your judgment. I enjoy receiving the tapes, but whatever happens, you know, I'll send you articles, and I appreciate that. And then one of my longtime friends and supporters said, write the books, and sent a suggestion of about 8 kinds of books he'd like to see rolling if I just sat here and did the books. Now, what I have decided is to keep the broadcast going, as we have done. I've been on 13 years. This starts the 14th year. I'm going to be on as long as I possibly can, and the station's functioning, and I'm well and functioning. We'll do the broadcast, and I'll do books and write out books. That's what I want to do, the two of those. Now, something has to give in between. The telephone conversations are limited to 1 minute, if possible, for people calling me, but it has to be between 8 and 9 in the evening. No morning, afternoon, or weekend calls. I'll answer your questions. I'll recommend books or articles, whatever you want, but not around-the-clock accessibility, which I have had. I don't want an unlisted number. I want to be available to people, but the home phone and the private phone will be for family and business, and any research-related questions, people writing or working in the evenings from 8 to 9, that's it. No more mail is the other point. No filling of sheets. If people want the bibliographies, they'll have to get the tapes from the tape center or chip in with friends, 3 or 4 friends, and every cassette that you order will have the bibliography on it. And I do put the book titles and information on the air. And if you're listening to this on the air, get your pencil and write it down. I was listening to the Today Show with Alexander Haig. I wonder what he had to say. I wrote it down. When I watch 60 Minutes, I write it down. They don't send you the scripts. There's no newscaster that is sending you their information or references, except the programs like Nightline or Phil Donahue, and they charge $3 to $4 for that source of information. But no more sheets, accompanying envelopes. I'm not going to stuff 40 to 60 envelopes every Tuesday when the broadcast is over. And I'm not going to keep up that kind of correspondence. I will offer my news on the air as a newscaster, and you can take it for entertainment or news or both, but I'm not out to fill these envelopes, as I say, with all kinds of information. Just sample of four letters I got. I was down in L.A. over the week and just came back. Here are the I hope the people who wrote this don't mind. I'm not giving the names or anything, but here's a sample of four letters. Just requests in the letter. Other matters, I'm ordering tapes, I'm renewing the tapes, but this is a regular listener. I love your program. But these are the kind of questions I get. One, I'm going to be in New Orleans for 6 weeks. Are there any other researchers as good as you? Please let me know. Send me any literature you can on the Mooney CIA connections. Formally, to answer that letter on the Mooney CIA took a minimum of 30 minutes, then the postage and the copying, putting the material back in the file. Another letter. Please fill me in on Representative Peter Rodino's committee. That's the committee investigating illegal Nazis in the United States. Is our Justice Department inquiry going on? Let me know what's going on in Washington, D.C. That Fritz Kramer, the reason Fritz Kramer is important, how Rodino has handled this, that would take about an hour and a half. Another letter, I tuned in on your discussion of Jonestown and Grenada and mind control connections. Please send me literature and resource information about the above and any previous literature on subjects of an ongoing nature. That would take about 40 minutes of writing. And finally, here's another kind of a letter. I've listened for some time. Please send me a bibliography of the Vatican links to the Nazis. If possible, please send me a list of names of high government officials who are members of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. Also, any newspaper articles of a bibliography of books on the Opus Dei. That would take about an hour and a half. So those are four letters. I came back from L.A. and had about 70 letters this week. And these four letters, in essence, would take 3 to 4 hours to answer. And I've been answering every letter through the year. So I think you understand the problem between filling envelopes, answering letters, and copying articles. I'm just, as I say, to do the news and do whatever I have to do to get books and articles out. Now, the other thing that I've been trying to work on, and it's just in the offing now, I took a course at Hartnell College out here on having a foundation, grants for a foundation. And I realized that my material was so controversial that it would really be hard to get people to put any large kind of money, if you're looking, say, for $500,000 or $250,000, to really keep this library preserved and classify these articles where they're available for all people at all times, and they can begin to order these things and have accessibility without me having to do all that work. And after the proposal I wanted was to understand the causes of World War III. And the professor teaching it writes many grant proposals, of course, and he thought, not knowing my politics or anything about it, that it was an excellent matter that I wouldn't have trouble maybe if I approached it properly to get the kind of funding that would pay some kind of a staff to get out these weekly reports that I do on the air to members of Congress and the right people in the news media so maybe they can do something about this information that most of them really are ignorant about. There are a lot of people suppressing it, and there's a lot of general ignorance out there. So, but this past week, I worked with somebody on writing up a proposal for a foundation grant, and the impetus was the articles in the New York Times and the Los Angeles Herald on the Nazi movement up in Idaho, their links to the national, international Nazis, and also the New York Times has a story that the FBI, for the first time in 40 years, is forced to investigate this dangerous network, that it's a threat to the FBI, it's a threat to the federal government. And when these people are putting in their documents and books that every Jew in Los Angeles has to be killed, and this is part of their book and their program to start in Los Angeles with every Jew in Los Angeles. The combined overt attack, the intention, the publication of the Turner Diaries, which is their textbook, and the federal government now being forced to take some interest in it when an FBI agent is shot or others have been shot. Now they have to go into the matter. And also, there's no reason why the Jewish community in Los Angeles, if nowhere else, should begin to perk up their ears. And maybe at this point, what I said was happening and seemed not believable at all may get into their thick skulls. The San Francisco Chronicle had a story this morning, January the 7th, 1984. Global fear of world war this decade. Now, in 1985, there is the reality of a World War III, and that's exactly what I was writing up and wanted to explain the people that have brought us not only to the brink of World War III, but want World War III, and not only do they want it, but they have their fingers on the button. So the fun and games are over. May the researcher, the theoretician, is over. These conspiracy theories are now fact. The fact is that domestic armies are prepared to have military operations in the United States and to kill in the United States blacks and Jews and liberals and all kinds of people and federal agents included because they're too soft on the others. As I say, the time is different now. Also, when you begin to read that Cardinal Manning of Los Angeles is defending Mr. Arturkovich, probably the personally the bloodiest, most horrible fascist during World War II, if there is such a title or recognition, the Vatican coming out and defending Nazis in France, in Italy, and in California at this time. It's the links of the Vatican and the rat line and the forming of Adolf Hitler and Mussolini's fascism against the Bolsheviks and the Morgan, J.P. Morgan giving Mussolini $100 million. To arm into that fascist state that he was, not for a democracy to oppose Bolshevism, but for a fascism to take over. And also, when you see people like Major General John Singlaub weaving in and out of the Los Angeles Police Department with his Western Gold files, working in the Defense Department on the board of the Soldiers of Fortune, helping start and working with Robert Brown, the paid mercenaries, that will go out and kill and torture and slice people up for any amount and are distributing information on the Waffen-SS and the silencers, working with the National Security Agency. When people like Singlaub and Mr. Lansdell from the Vietnam Phoenix program are working in the Defense Department with our private mercenaries, with the torturers and killers in Central America as they did in Southeast Asia, they get the recognition that they are really important. And Singlaub, of course, then works with the Contras, with J. Peter Grace, and those links back to Auschwitz, to the Zyklon B, the Nazis. I've been detailing these names for a long, long time, so I'm just jumping into them real fast now. I don't have to detail them for you. This is all available on past broadcasts, and you can get it. But the combination of forces now has been visible to me, and I've shared it with you. It's becoming more overt, and the box of matches now is beginning to catch on fire, I feel. So maybe the time is right to work for a foundation, and I'll do that. So we'll be on the air in 1985, and finally, the tapes will go up in price. Those of you who have subscribed, it is the same price until the date that you've paid through is over. And then if you want copies of this broadcast, you can write to me and the Tape Center, and there is going to be a difference as of today, January the 7th, and I'll let you know what that is. Now, to begin with the news, that's a long explanation of where I'm going, but it's very essential because I really hadn't decided whether to just close the shop in terms of radio and just write, but I don't want to do that. The work that we do weekly is of utmost importance and probably more important than anything I could sit down and spend months writing a book about. Now, yesterday, Sunday, in the on the radio, in the TV section of the Los Angeles Herald, and you may have had the same thing, they have a summary of the great broadcast on Sunday morning. Usually we get the soap operas. You know what goes on TV in the mornings. But on Sunday, you get this extra treat. So let me read you the guest, in case you weren't aware, who was on the air just yesterday in the morning, filling our airwaves, every major station, NBC, CBS, and ABC. It's important because I think the single most important man or men behind this World War III, if I could narrow it to two people pushing us to the brink, one is General Fritz Kramer. We've never seen his face. I don't know if he's an American general. There was a German General Fritz Kramer, but he's our Pentagon Fritz Kramer, now retired and sharing offices with Daniel Graham of the former Defense Intelligence Agency, the daddy of the Star Wars. And their protege, Henry Kissinger, who weaves in and out of every country, every multinational corporation. And next week or so, I'm going to give you some more members of the board of Kissinger Associates. They are so important, and they touch every base. And they're trying to work Henry Kissinger up to be president of the United States. The list of the 10 most admired men in 1984, number 5 was Henry Kissinger. On what basis? The Cambodia bombing, of killing Bhutto and putting Zia in Pakistan, that dictatorship, getting rid of Salvador Allende and putting in Pinochet. We don't have to run down his whole career. But Henry Kissinger is terribly, terribly important. A few people don't agree with me on the importance, but he is serving other people. But he's the visible one, and that's why he's important. Now, NBC, Meet the Press. Mr. Robert Keith Gray, the public relations man, represents NBC. They had a conference roundtable from Geneva with Marvin Kalb, Tom Brokaw, Roger Mudd, their main announcers. Marvin Kalb is very much part, he and his brother Bernard Kalb, of the Kissinger saga, going everywhere with Henry Kissinger, representing him, telling the lies about Aja and the KGB plot to kill the Pope. Marvin Kalb is part of the NBC disinformation with Michael Ledeen and Claire Sterling and Alexander Haig. So NBC has Marvin Kalb as one of the stars of the roundtable from Geneva. CBS, Face the Nation, has former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger himself, Leslie Gelb of the New York Times, and Tom Bethel of the American Spectator. Tom Bethel came from London as soon as Jim Garrison had arrested Clay Shaw from the International Trademark as a suspect in the murder of John Kennedy. Bethel came to Jim Garrison's offices and said, "I'll take care of the investigation." I knew Bethel. I was only there a few days. The day I got home, I called and said, "Jim, you're covered by the CIA." And Jim, of course, the investigation was really damaged and hurt. How he wanted to bring in Mr. Russo and David Ferry, who was murdered after he was a suspect in the case, an overt suspect. Tom Bethel stayed at Garrison's office. Garrison was righteously betrayed. He then went on to be an independent writer. He's on the staff of National Review with William Buckley. Buckley, the CIA Knight of Malta agent from the Vatican and CIA, hardly separate, but he's both of those. Buckley formed Young Americans for Freedom that brought in the Munich men from Germany to Dallas, Texas, when Kennedy was killed, that I've written about. Tom Bethel writes for them, and then the newspaper, the Los Angeles Herald, said, "Tom Bethel of the American Spectator." I should suppose I should take the Spectator now. I had met, as I say, tried to work with, and saw that he was betraying Garrison when I was in New Orleans. It didn't take me long to see what he was doing to Jim Garrison. Now he's with Henry Kissinger as a so-called expert on CBS Face the Nation. Then ABC, this week with David Brinkley, Lawrence Eagleburger, former Secretary of State for Political Affairs, and McGeorge Bundy and William G. Hyland talking on the Soviet affairs, the weapons, representing National Security Council and former experience in the Defense Department. McGeorge Bundy gave you the Vietnam War, the Phoenix Program, the Agent Orange, trying to pass himself off as a limp liberal compared to these other overt fascists. A lot of the pressure and the power of the men like Sing Lao developed in the Vietnam War, in the South Korean War, with their good friend Charles Willoughby and the network that became the fascist prototype for overthrowing and moving now into Central America, as well as the damage a lot of them have done in Middle East. But Eagleburger is on the board of Kissinger Associates. All of them is behind, you know, take the hidden puppet, that Mr. Kramer, whoever he is, that faceless Kramer with the monocle. Let's smoke him out this year. This is the year 1985. Smoke out Fritz Kramer. That's one of the things I'm going to talk about every single week, I think. And so you have on the TV your Marvin Kalb, your Henry Kissinger, Tom Bethel, and Lawrence Eagleburger, and George Bundy. And if that wasn't enough, comes Monday morning this morning, who's talking about the weapons agreements over in Geneva, or disagreements? Alexander Haig. Haig is the direct protege of Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer. That's how he jumped over 400 other people to become a general and also to be chief of staff when Richard Nixon was slipped out. He was in there running the White House, he and Kissinger at that time, making a mess out of Central America. If you want their track record, look at Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia and Thailand today. And the Philippines, do you like it? I mean, are these guys all we have? And Haig was fired by Ronald Reagan as Secretary of State in June of 82, that momentous week. He'd been meeting with the people in Israel, coaxing them with the green light. It's okay to massacre the Palestinians over there, women and children. And then Israel, you see the state that Israel is in trying to defend itself against those massacres, and Mr. Sharon in court every day with these papers coming out. And Haig also was fired. He was favoring the Falklands, which was the Falkland War, the Argentinians. This was the base of the Nazis, the death squads, the people who had killed 50,000 others. The democracy wasn't in yet. The killing hadn't stopped. Haig wanted his cohorts, and Haig, a Knight of Malta, working in the Vatican, working in the CIA and Defense Department. The major media is completely saturated with these people. That's why it's so important to stay on the air and have you make tapes of this. And those of you who have tapes, get the sheets and copy and tell other people. There is another source of news. That's why I scolded people who sit with this information. But the power brokers that I've identified through the years saturate every single weekend. The lazy people who watch a little bit of news and think they're getting educated before their ball game starts, and in between, you know, the weekly activities that people have, that's the kind of masters of deceit, these major networks that have lied to us and then have the nerve to say that we are worried about World War III. They deliver it to us on a platter and then wonder if we're worried about it. Now, I just want to run down, without too much comment, just a few little news stories. I call them one-liners so we don't lose track of them. This is from the L.A. Herald, January the 5th. A Los Angeles physician becomes the doctor for the White House. Dr. T. Burton Smith, a urologist who treated Reagan as a private patient when he had problems before, will replace Dr. Daniel Ruge, R-U-G-E, as the physician to the president. Now, remember when Reagan was shot in 1981 in March, and I have a photograph, you could have had it too, of a Volkswagen pulling up with special blood for the president, and I wondered if 3 years later our dear president was going to get some kind of a blood disease or something that would affect his health. Okay, the urologist is moving in. It says he had a urinary tract obstruction before, and he treated him once before. We don't know when or how. That never, I don't think, was getting much attention. A new doctor is coming in, a urinary specialist to take care of the president. We know that males of this age do have problems with prostate and so forth. Let's see what Ronald Reagan has this year, because we're getting awfully close to Task Force 157. That's that group that worked in Washington, D.C. when George Bush was president, when Bobby Inman was running the National Security Council and deputy director of the CIA, who now holds the head of all these 10 major computer companies combining down in Houston, Texas. Henry Kissinger on Task Force 157, Kissinger's associates, and Robert Gray on Task Force 157, covering NBC, ABC, CBS, the major Sundays, and in between all the time as experts. And Mr. Gray, a very strategic role with Mr. Paul Exalt, William Casey, Knight of Malta from the Vatican, the Georgetown Center for Strategic Studies, the Disinformation Center against the Soviet Union with Mr. Litwack and Ledeen and Claire Sterling. These people have worked together. They're close now And let's see if Bush, their former director, will be taking a little more responsibility. We'll watch Reagan, but I'm very suspicious about the changing of doctors at this time. Now, Mr. Meese said this last Wednesday that he would, not Meese, Mr. Clark, pardon me, said William Clark said that he would resign as the Secretary of the Interior. That was Wednesday. And my first comment when I saw the article was, which justice of the Supreme Court will die now because he's going to be the new justice if one is removed? And Reagan is very tricky, but he's very predictable. So I was suspicious when I heard that William Clark was stepping down. Not suspicious. I know he's getting ready for the job. That was on Wednesday. But it didn't take 2 days to find out that Justice Powell had a cancer operation, that even though the prognosis is excellent, he said when he was appointed that he would resign in 1981. So he's long overdue. That's when Reagan would become president and take oath of office. So Clark, he couldn't say, I'm leaving the Interior. If they announced that Justice Powell had a cancer operation, William Clark wouldn't say the next day, I'm going to leave as Secretary of Interior. It works the other way. Of course, they knew in Washington that he was scheduled for operation on a certain date. Getting his papers ready would take 1 or 2 weeks to say Justice Powell has to go in for a cancer operation. And there's Mr. William Clark saying, you know, I'm leaving the Interior, and a few days later, Powell has cancer. So watch for William Clark to be nominated as a justice of the Supreme Court. The head of the Drug Enforcement Agency resigned, Francis Mullen, Jr. Go back to the broadcast I did on Mr. Raymond Donovan, the Secretary of Labor. Mr. Webster should be out. Mr. Mullen should be out. He knew that there were hours and days of tape recordings of Raymond Donovan with Joe Maselli in New York City talking on those tapes about the death of Frank Scotti, one of the subcontractors to the Schiavone. And Mullen then, after the confirmation hearing, said, oh, yeah, we have these tapes. We knew them. And he held them back from Congress. He held them back from the people who were making a decision whether this man should be Secretary of Labor because Donovan gave Mr. Maselli $200,000. Not only that, it was a loan, questionable loan, no interest, and not don't have to pay back after Mr. Frasconi was murdered, his competitor. And then he gave him the entire huge contract for the subway work where he was a meat packer. He suddenly became building a tunnel in New York City. Mr. Mullen is out. He should be out. He was also linked to organized crime in New Orleans before he ever took the job as the head of Drug Enforcement Agency. It was as rotten as the Raymond Donovan appointment or Paul Laxalt heading the Republican Fundraising Committee with all that mafia skimming money that comes out of his state of Nevada. There was another story in the L.A. Times. Edwin Meese and Mr. Deaver, Michael Deaver, won't be replaced. They're both leaving their office on the White House staff, and the Times said that no one will take their position. It says these men, among Reagan's closest advisors, came in positions that were essentially designed for them. Well, Mr. Meese and Mr. Deaver, both involved in scandals, but jobs that were special, never had before by anybody else, so they don't have to be replaced. Buffers around the president for goodness knows what. The L.A. Times has a story June 5th. Deaver in a realty deal facing inquiry. The Government Ethics Committee is looking into a $10,000 real estate deal to see whether Deaver, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, properly complied with requirements to disclose some of his financial statements. Mr. Fred Fielding, another one among the Vesco William Casey people who has covered up from Watergate and way back, the attorney for the White House, says he doesn't think Deaver's resigning for the White House has anything to do with his investigation. I'll bet you it has. Mr. Mullen is out. Mr. Meese hopes he'll move up. He shouldn't if you sent the proper letters and we acted accordingly. Deaver is out, and also the attorney that works, not the attorney, but the Department of Agriculture that works with Mr. John R. Block, our Secretary of Agriculture, has been caught with not paying back a loan of $400,000 to the Farmers Home Administration loan. The Secretary of Agriculture, his business partner, took out this nice loan, hasn't paid it back. So the sleaze still goes on. Reagan doesn't like the term sleaze, but it goes on. And finally, one story which doesn't come as a shock to me, but some people in Los Angeles were really surprised. Support for Arturkovich by Manning called a shock. the director of a prominent Jewish organization, was shocked and sad that Roman Catholic Cardinal Timothy Manning called for compassion against Nazi war criminal Andra Arturkovich. They had so much compassion, they built a rat line and sent over 300,000 wanted Nazi criminals to South America alone, and has been feeding and contacting with them and releasing money for them that was hidden away. There's been a lot of compassion, but a lot of people in L.A. didn't understand the role of the Vatican. I think the Vatican and Arturkovich are a perfect combination. The cruelest man in fascist Europe and the Archbishop in Los Angeles pleading. We'll take a one-minute break and then get on to some more important news stories of the week.